and welcome to another episode of Radio Warnerd. The date today is February 11th, 2023, and this is episode 366. I'm the host, Mark Ames. I am in Rochester, New York. You're listening to Radio Warnerd at patreon.com/Radio Warnerd. And I'm on the line with John Dolan, a.k.a. Gary Brecher, a.k.a. the Warnerd in Glasgow. John, you feeling a little better?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little better. People can probably hear my voice sounds more like whatever normal is than before.
You sound much better. Yeah, that's good. All right, so we don't need to yap too much because we have an amazing guest and interview with the legendary journalist Seymour Hersh, who just put out an absolute bombshell of a story, how America took out the Nord Stream pipeline. The New York Times called it a mystery, but the United States executed a covert sea operation that was kept secret until now. Seymour Hersh, of course, is probably the most legendary investigative journalist alive. He is famous for a Pulitzer Prize winner. He uncovered the My Lai massacre, one of many, as he would say. But he got the goods on the My Lai massacre, which really had a huge impact after they failed to bury it. That was in around, I think, 69 or 70. His biggest scoop in 1974, 75, I've written and talked about this a lot, which is exposing the CIA's illegal domestic spying program on anti-war dissidents, MH Chaos. The CIA was eventually caught spying on at least 300,000 Americans against its charter, which is what led to the famous Church Committee hearings. That was Hersh. He did not get a Pulitzer for that, by the way. And it's rumored that Ben Bradley, whose Washington Post competition, is one of the reasons why. I think he had some pull on the jury.
Wow. It's interesting, as we were saying before the show, that as far as I can tell, the Washington Post has not had one word about Hersh's latest scoop, which you'll be talking about.
Yep. Nothing in the Washington Post, nothing in the New York Times. Something in Reuters about the denial, calling it a blog post. Because he published it on Substack. That does not mean he doesn't have editors, as we'll hear. I mean, the reason why it's such a well-crafted professional piece is because Hersh used excellent editing and copy editing. Anyway, other stories he's done and books. I mean, I'll read a few of his books. The Price of Power, Kissinger and the Nixon White House. I think he had a legendary relationship with Kissinger. The Target is Destroyed, What Really Happened to Flight 007 and What America Knew About It. We talked about that on an earlier Radio Warnerd episode.
Because, you've been on that consistently.
Yeah. The Dark Side of Camelot, which upset a lot of JFK fans. And more recently, The Killing of Osama bin Laden, which is part of the reason, I think, why the liberal, the center left, one of the big reasons why they really turned on him, because he was critical. He was not part of the Washington.
They spoiled Obama's big holiday, basically.
Yep. And Reporter, a memoir, which is where he mentions some articles I wrote about him. And it's because of that. And he cited me in that book, which was a huge honor. And that was sort of my opening to get this interview with Seymour. He said it's the first interview he's giving about this. So excited. It ain't easy. That's all I can tell you. Interviewing him ain't easy. It's, for me, it's unlike any interview I've ever done before.
It's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's, he is the real thing. He, he's not like, doesn't have a, some kind of fake persona. And then you talk to him and he's like, no, he is a lot scarier to talk to than I imagined. But great, wild, wild interview. So without further ado, I think we should get to our interview about his story, what he broke, just briefly, a quick background on the story, because we're not going to talk about it with him. What he exposed was that the Nord Stream pipelines, which were mysteriously blown up on September 26th of last year, that it was an American operation approved by the National Security Council and the CIA chief, Bill Burns, on Biden's directions, that the plan was first ordered to be cooked up as far back as early mid 2021, just not too long after Biden took office. We've talked about how the incoming Biden administration decided to take a lot more robustly hawkish stance towards Russia in Ukraine. And they were already planning to blow this up, which is pretty amazing because publicly the Blinken State Department had said, we're not going to any longer lean on Germany about Nord Stream 2. You can build it if you want. And then privately, they started working on plans to blow these things up. And then the plan went really into motion in February of 2022 as the war was, you know, it was clear that Russia was going to invade. And they trained up some Navy, U.S. Navy divers to plant the explosives, cover them up. And then they used their Norwegian friends who had an interest in this because Norway produces enormous amounts of gas and has long old relationships with the U.S., including Jens Stoltenberg, who... Young Jens Stoltenberg, I looked this up. I saw one of the lines of trying to attack this Hirsch piece was, he says Stoltenberg has been a CIA asset since the Vietnam War. But that can't be because he was a teenager. Like, you know, thinking that Hirsch meant he was some kind of super spy in Saigon when he was 16. But you go back through the record when Stoltenberg was named the head of NATO, they all talk about how he was a famous anti-war protester who threw rocks at the U.S. embassy. And somehow all of young Jens's friends got pinched except for Jens.
Wow, that's amazing.
And he moved on up to be the NATO chief, yeah. And he came from, his dad was the defense minister. Anyway, I don't want to talk any more about this. I just want to give a little bit of background for those people who don't yet know the whole story here. It's an insane story, and yeah, we'll talk about this with him. And so let's get right to our interview with Seymour Hirsch.
Well, hello.
Hi. Good. That sounds good.
Well,
okay.
Why we did a fucking guy from Germany called and said, are we on now? I said, no, we didn't make a date. I said, because I'm lousy. Let's just start. Let's just do this goddamn thing.
Okay.
Good, all right. Let's go.
I saw that the Germans are starting to try to cope with this story and
cope? Do you call what they're doing coping?
Trying to, yeah. All right. So that's John is my partner there. And
hi, I'm Mr. Hirsch, John Dolan here. I'm the host.
Well, I owe you, buddy. I owe you, buddy, because of the nice things he wrote.
Thank you.
You're my first interview. Oh, you know, maybe my last. I don't know. I can't say. Let's go. Are we running? Let's go.
Okay. Rolling. Okay. Good. And 3, 2, 1. Okay, we are really excited and honored to have here with us the legendary reporter Seymour Hirsch.
Hold on 1 second. I got to clap for the director. Hold on. It's my show, so I got to do it. Okay, start over. Let's go.
That's fine.
You won't bother
All right.
us again.
Yep. And 3, 2, 1. Okay, we are really honored and excited to have with us legendary Pulitzer Prize winning. Investigative journalist Seymour Hirsch, got to do it, uncovered everything from the My Lai massacre, the illegal CIA domestic spying programs, MH Chaos, through the Abu Ghraib torture scandal, and on and on and on. And without going too much into background here, we'll say more when we're off the phone with you, when we talk about introducing it. You've just put out, a new bombshell story that the world... As I'm seeing it, going back through your memoir, you're the author of several books, by the way, the last of which was Reporter, a memoir in which I got a nice shout out, and that was my intro to you. But anyway, going back through your memoir, and we'll get into this, you see this a lot with your stories. Every time you put out something that people don't want to hear, they ignore it, they bury it, they ridicule it, they do all this shit. But anyway, the first thing I want to talk about is this. This is an insane story. This is a story that you got that Biden approved an operation that the mystery of the Nord Stream pipeline bombings is solved, and that Biden approved an operation where U.S. Navy divers working with Norway set off those explosives. And what that means is that the U.S. committed an act of war or terrorism against its own ally in the middle of a war. I'm going to quote here real quickly. This is where the ambassadors to NATO met right after the pipeline explosions. And here's a quote from them that I got from VOA News from back in September 29th. Any deliberate attack against allies' critical infrastructure would be met with a united and determined response, which I guess now the united determined response is silence, But you have this quote in your story, Seymour, that I think is, for me, stood out as kind of one of the key quotes. And it is this, throughout, quote, all of this scheming, your source said, quote, some working guys in the CIA and the State Department were saying, don't do this, it's stupid, and will be a political nightmare if it comes out. It is, isn't it incredibly stupid, or have I lost my mind here? Like, why would, in your years of reporting, have you come across something like this?
You mean something, you mean, you're asking somebody who was involved in writing about the Vietnam War and massacres.
I know.
Have come across something like this?
Well, blowing up your allies' critical infrastructure.
But they didn't see it that way. They saw the oil, they saw the gas coming from Russia into, you have to understand, Russia's full of methane gas. In right. Siberia, they could go for decades.
Right.
But Russia had pipelines that were supplying gas to Germany. At a discount price, very cheap, all the gas they could use, so much so that the German companies were taking some of the gas and reselling for right. at a profit. And the Russians, you know, it was a company controlled by Gazprom, which is controlled mm-hmm. by oligarchs, which are obviously respectful of Putin, to put it mildly. Mm-hmm. But 49% of it were four different European countries that who ran companies that were selling gas downstream all over Europe. Mm-hmm. So you had a tremendous source of gas, cheap gas for Europe. And Germany's a real powerhouse, you know, Mercedes. And they have the largest chemical, BASF, the largest chemical company in the world. They soak up gas, and they're industrial-based. And so the fear was, Biden wants this war. I mean, don't ask me why presidents want war. I think mm-hmm. it's good for their ratings. I just don't know. But Biden was very big on, you know, showing the Russians that in the Ukraine with Ukrainian soldiers that we can mm-hmm. we'll show them we can stand up mm-hmm. to Russia. It's good politically in America too. We all, you know, we wake up every day and, you know, with kicking Russia mm-hmm. and Putin are you know anyway.
Our so nemesis.
I can't tell you. All I can tell you is that he saw that gas as a weapon, because as long as Russia was selling that much gas, they thought Russia would weaponize it. If we mm-hmm. started, if there was a war, this is all beginning. This point of view began before the war started last February, a year ago almost from today. And the Russians had made it clear what they were building up on the coast of Belarus, what you will. It was very clear they were going to go.
Right.
And actually, by the time Biden made the threat, on February the 7th, and by this time the Russians are already beginning to move up hospital units, you know, with emergency operating rooms and all that. So it was clear they were going. So he gets on, and he has the German ambassador Schultz with him. He has a news conference in February in the White House, and they're all talking about, you know,
remember that.
We're going to stop this gas. Yeah. They're not going to get, you know, Russia. We will not let Russia. If Russia attacks, we will not let them. We'll not let Russian gas keep on coming, and we will do this. And he was asked, "What do you mean?" Well, we know how to do it. We will get it done.
Right.
Schultz said nothing.
Right.
And a couple of weeks earlier, the Undersecretary for State Nuland had said at a news conference, "We can stop it. We just want Russia to know we can stop their gas by any means."
Yes. If Russia invades Ukraine, one way or another, Nord Stream 2 will not move forward. Right.
And so, what does that mean? You know, so I don't know. I don't know if anybody's thinking, but I'll tell you what that means. You know, that's called a threat.
Yeah.
So you're asking me, how did you find this story?
Yes.
You know, a friend of mine put it this way: what you've done, Cy, an old friend of mine, smart friend, you're an expert at deconstructing the obvious.
Yeah.
What else was it?
But
what
you also got.
It was a sitter.
Right, but you also got sources. I mean, you have a great source walking you through.
Yeah,
the,
but you know that you know if I think with the newspapers, particularly the German news, they've been very nasty to me, and the New York Times and the Washington Post just ignore me. I think what they want to really, what they think I should do is, you know, use his name and get him put in jail.
Right.
Stuff like that, which would end my career. You know, I haven't put anybody in. I've been doing this for 50 years. Eli started in 69. and I will tell you something. Inside the community, I protect people. And
yes.
So I'm taking heat. I have a source. I'm taking heat. But that's okay. That's my job.
Right.
But it's their job to understand the business a little better. And they know the business a little better at the New York Times and Washington Post. They have reports. They know what, you know, they know. The New York Times, the problem is that the New York, it's all been cheapened because now the New York Times and Washington Post, they think, you know, an unnamed source can be a press guy, a press secretary for somebody who whispers something on the side to them. I don't know. They don't seem to have anybody inside.
Right.
You know, the coverage of the Ukrainian war is compared to what I'm hearing from my friends who have access to the information. It's not just in country. You know, sources don't all have to be from America. You know, there are other countries that we're very close to. I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you, the thinking's so dumb.
Right.
But I will tell you that I've been hearing from, you know, the war I know about isn't the war you're reading about.
Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
No, I just admit,
it's not going as well?
Of course not.
Yeah.
The Russians haven't put, the Russians didn't do so great either. I think they made great misjudgments.
Yes.
But, you know, they have a 350,000 man regular army that hasn't gone in yet.
Yeah.
They're still working with outsiders.
Yeah.
But that isn't the point. The point, we're getting off on a track. The point is that these guys know better than, you know, they're just doing it because, I don't know, maybe they think that the story I wrote supports Russia.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
It does suggest that they have probably, I did a lot of looking at the law about it. And the law on the sea is very interesting. There are treaties that go back to 1884 when we began to lay telegraph lines across the ocean. If you inadvertently or deliberately ran across a line, that was a real bad deal. There were mostly economic consequences.
Right.
There's actually no law on the books that says knocking off a pipeline. And the pipelines in question, the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, two major pipelines, they both were covered. They ran over roughly 750 miles from St. Petersburg down all the way into northeast Washington, Germany. One way straight shot all the way down the Baltic Sea. That's a lot of pipeline. There's about 12,000 pipelines now, and there's no law on the books that says deliberately blowing up a pipeline is a crime because that has never been considered. But it's certainly a lot of law about damages if you damage a pipeline. You know, and this is a pipeline that's probably going to cost. I didn't get into it, but there's a Swiss company that did an estimate $1.5 billion to fix the pipelines.
Right.
So it may be too much. I don't know what they're going to do with it.
I mean, don't you think? Look, Germany's, as you were talking about earlier, Germany is this industrial powerhouse, and its export economy. I mean, we just interviewed a couple of days ago, anyway, you know, a person who runs a business magazine out of Germany. Its export economy has been predicated on cheap piped in, not LNG spot market, sort of, you know, going up and down with the market, but piped, contracted, you know, for a few decades, the exact price, you know how cheap it is, how below market it is, and you can build your whole industry on that. And since they lost that, since the war started, BASF, as you mentioned, the petrochemicals giant, has shuttered something like 100 factories. So what the U.S. is doing is crippling the economy. And, you know, one thing in your story, you talk about, I mean, it's really Bill Burns and Jake Sullivan, Bill Burns, the head of the CIA, and Jake Sullivan, head of the National Security Council, who pushed this forward, but I assume, you know, at the behest of Biden, or they got into his head or he got in their heads, I don't know. But I got to say, I'm surprised Bill Burns, who is a diplomat, who I don't know if you read his cables that came out through WikiLeaks. I mean, they're very well-written cables. He's got a lot of journalists sort of respect him. I liked reading his cables. One of his cables, when he was an ambassador out in, it was either Ukraine or Russia in 2007, said, if we try to bring Ukraine, you know, it's clear now, having talked to these people, if we try to bring Ukraine into NATO, Russia will go to war. It's a red line. And now he's approving blowing up our allies, you know, what feeds the Allies' export economy? What do you think happened to Bill Burns, for example?
How in the hell do I know? I mean, I could give you. This is a question. I know he wants to be a Secretary of State, maybe in a future government. But I don't know him that well. But he's always been a gentleman. Every time I've talked to him, he's always been polite and failing. You know, not very helpful. He's not interested. But you know, I just don't know. I mean, the question is, you're absolutely right about everything. BASF has actually been talking to China about moving some facilities there. Right. I mean, this is devastating. In another way, as you can say, it's good because China's hugely advanced in us on renewables. And so I think the Germans and the Macron of France went there. And don't forget, Schultz went there. They have to get more interested in renewables because you're not going to be able to depend on the natural gas anymore. But it's, I mean, the economic stuff, which hasn't been reported nearly enough in the Western press here. This is called, I guess you could shooting off your left foot, for no reason whatsoever. Yes, we shot ourselves in the foot. Yes, it's stupid beyond belief. Yes, it's a criminal. I would think that it's certainly unquestionably a wonderful degree of stupidity at the White House and on part of the president. It's just stupid. It's just damn stupid because they saw Russia as weaponizing the war.
Yep, as weaponizing.
Next question is you have to ask yourself, what is with presidents? Why do they like war so much?
Because
it's politically useful. I can't tell you. I don't know. Everything you said is totally correct. I've spent a lot of time looking at the economic consequences, just like you know there from being in Russia so long.
Yeah,
or knowing Europe. I mean, it's downstream. It's colossally bad.
Yeah,
and it's inexcusable. And then, but the way I look at it, you know, the White House, you know, despite all the criticism of Biden, they have the New York Times and the Washington Post and MSN and CNN and fronting for them.
Yep.
Yeah. You know,
the enemy is Fox News. The only reporter that called me from any TV station of outside of, you know, somebody that's running out of the kitchen of their mother's house, it was, what's his name?
Tucker Carlson, I'll bet, right?
Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Used to have a, was on a talk show and he wore a bow tie. But
I remember.
Very smart. Yeah. But he knows. He called me up and he said, I know you don't like what I do, but I'm on your side on this one.
Yeah.
And I said, I wouldn't go on the show because he's been dead right. I'll tell you something else Tucker's been right about it, is the war in Ukraine. But, you know, but it's amazing to me that how they fall in line, my colleagues. They didn't do it. When I was at the New York Times, they didn't do that.
That's I know.
No, I mean, Mr. Hirsch, I'm old enough to remember when My Lai broke. And there was a sense of...
God.
I know.
We're all old.
Why are you still working? You're too old to work.
I need the money.
Don't we all? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So I remember there was a sense of the media as being against a few diehard maniacs in the national security state. And the media was on the side of the truth and they wanted it uncovered. And that seemed to change at some point.
I mean, the My Lai story, I went back and read how it was received. People now say, Seymour Hirsch has lost it. This story... It's not like the My Lai story, you know. People have idea in their minds that the press was so much more open and so meritocratic and so on. But you had a hard time, a really hard time getting your My Lai massacre stories published. You couldn't get it in Life magazine, Look magazine. These were huge magazines at that time, and you were already a well-known AP reporter in Washington, so you had to go with. Like what's a version of Substack almost, which was a friend of yours, brand new news service, wire service, dispatch news service, just to get it out there, right?
Well, it was even worse than that because Life, I covered the Pentagon for the AP for a couple of years. That's how I learned to hate the war. But after that, since then, I'd actually done a book and was giving speeches and had done a bunch of stuff in the New York Times Magazine. So I wasn't out of the loop. And when I learned the My Lai story, I was a freelancer, but I was doing stuff and doing a second book. And so, the Me Life story, nobody wanted it. And right. I went to Life right away because they'd offered me, they wanted me to write for them at that time, unheard of money, you know, more than, you know, 10 cents a minute, a word, you know.
Right.
So they already had offered me a job, you know, basically, not just they wanted me to start writing for them. And then it was a hot magazine. Remember, came out.
Oh, what, yeah, it was huge. Huge. Yeah.
Huge.
Huge
and,
as a kid.
And
yeah.
So and when he said no after a couple of days, then I knew where there was a problem. So it was not only that, after I did this story, people act like it was just automatically taken.
Yes.
The third story before we broke through, I found a kid who actually did the murders and talked about
right.
it. And we took it. I was working with a guy named David Oakes, who later became Revenge of the Nerds. He was a producer of one of
yes.
the producers of
yes.
that. Anyway, Dave, we went to AB. We went to Walter Cronkite. And that did it. Mike Wallace interviewed the kid. But you know, mm-hmm. so it was really very hard to get it on. So with this, it's never been a question of the press being open to stories that might be very bad for us.
Right. Exactly.
You know, there's all the hagiography we did about World War II. Nobody wants to talk about the fact we spent 2 years doing daytime bombing of cities in Germany. Mm-hmm. Which a normal, if we'd lost the war, would have been described as, you know, the Germans would have tried to hang every pilot that flew for war crimes.
Right. Same
you know,
with Japan.
You know, we weren't, you know, the CPA in the circle of error was not even 5 miles. If you got within 10 miles of the targets, you were lucky with your bombs then in World War II. So anyway, it was all very primitive stuff. So you're right. It's just, you know, I'm used to it. This sort of stunned me because it was such an obvious story.
Right.
The Russians didn't do it. If the Russians didn't do it, you know, which yeah. country in NATO? You know, I was joking yeah. earlier with a friend. Macedonia, are they in NATO? I think so. They did it. You know, I mean,
yeah.
it's not even a hard story to understand. The President of the United States and the Undersecretary of State both said they were going to do it. And
right.
they did it. They didn't. They waited a long time, but they did it.
Yep.
They cut off oil, and they saw oil. And then right after that, I also, in this article that I did for Substack, Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, in the fall, actually, literally within a month of the actual event, which he, of course, knew about, we did, he gave a speech in which he talked about stopping Russia from weaponizing oil and gas.
Right.
Now is the time we can do it. And he knew we already knew what we'd already done. He clearly was among the people who knew what happened. And so it says something. You know, we're really not a dumb country. We're really a very smart country. There's a lot of very bright people in this country. We really can understand nuance. But I'm not sure that look, the New York Times has a lot of terrific reporters on it. It always has bright people. They have sections that are terrific. But when it comes to this kind of reporting, that I don't know, I'm not sure they underestimate the American people. We're ready to accept the fact that a president did this. And
mm-hmm.
they it's not only accepting it, but it's also saying, at a time when, of course, everybody's terrified, what Republican's going to emerge, you know, are we going to get another Trump-like character? There's a lot of worry about that. Yeah. I understand that. But you have to hold the president to account for something. As you said, you just explained why it was incredibly stupid to do it. And I'll tell you, they got through it all fall because it was a mild fall.
Right.
snow on the slopes.
Yes.
You saw those stories.
Yeah.
It's cold now. And I don't know that much about the rest of Germany, but I talked to people in Berlin.
Yeah.
They're mad.
Yes.
One of my best friends just came back from a sabbatical there, an academic. And he got back and he was saying, you cannot believe how angry everybody is, how cold they are, how the gas prices have gone up so high, a big part of the budget.
Yep.
We know that's going on in the UK,
yep.
which has all sorts of other problems. The UK
yep.
is, you know, what can you say about a country that voted to commit suicide with Brexit?
I
you
know.
Can't have too much.
Yeah.
You can't have much sympathy. Anyway,
yeah.
we've been yakking too long. Any other questions? What do you? We got to. We've kicked.
Well, yeah,
the
I did want to ask
about. The ball around.
Yeah, yeah. I want to. I mean, it's more of a sort of journalism society kind of question, right? But so when you did your, I think your biggest story, Me Life, of course, was huge. But your most consequential story, which was when you uncovered the CIA's illegal domestic spying program, MH Chaos, that was first ran in the New York Times. You finally got in the New York Times. Even after you got your Pulitzer for Me Life, they didn't hire you. It took more time than that, which is kind of incredible. Anyway, you got that in the New York Times in late 74. This is like this brief period. We've talked about this on the show, which is almost like American glasnost in the sort of mid-70s. And there was
pushback even then, which is incredible. They went after you for using anonymous sources. They said you overwrote, you know, again, the same usual.
The big one is I said it was massive. That was the word they used on. Uh-huh. And by the way, in that story, there were seven.
It was massive.
Sources. Seven right. unnamed stories. And that story I did not tell the New York Times editors about till Friday morning. And my editor, Abe Rosenthal, then conservative as he was, probably the best ever, by far the best editor I've ever worked with. Mm. He used to walk in the New York, I'm in Washington, he used to walk in the newsroom and occasionally, twice he went up behind me and did the Bill Murray rub on your hair.
And noogies? And he gave me, you noogies?
Noogie. He was very conservative and he'd say, how's my little commie today?
Yes.
And then he'd say, next sentence would be, what do you have for me? Because he understood. His personal instincts had nothing to do. What you're missing in this, it was after Watergate, and the president was devalued. We don't have that situation now. We now haven't resolved it. So then you could do things. Seven unnamed sources, and I did that story. I did tell the office about it till Friday morning. I wrote all night, and they ran 7,000 words in the Sunday paper, which closed about 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock the next morning. And then without lawyers and all that stuff, there was that much trust there.
Yes.
You know, but the public has lost that much trust, and you know, I can understand. It's if instead of trying to track down some of the stuff and saying, well, you know, unnamed sources, but it is true that the president did say this, and the undersecretary did say this, and the secretary of state did say this. You know, we got to stop it. This is a weapon. You know, it's clear there was a rationale beyond just words for this thing, and they don't do that.
Right. Well, and it gave them.
It's only been a week. I mean, I was on this Wednesday. You're the first guy I've talked to about it, and here we are beating it around. All right, this is the longest 20-minute interview I've done.
I'm sorry. I'm going to keep you here a little bit, but you know, look, the thing about the MH Chaos program is that, despite the push, the usual pushback, it was less so because this is right after Watergate. And there was a response. I mean, the government was worried at that time that the journalists, sort of investigative journalism, had a lot of cash. And even Rosenthal may have been an establishment guy, but he was also a capitalist and a competitor. I mean, I have a quote here of what he said about you. He said, Hirsch is like a puppy that isn't quite housebroken, but as long as he's pissing on Ben Bradley's carpet, let him go. So, that's a quote that I found from him about you. He wanted you to best the Washington Post, right?
No, but you know, people talk. There was a pretty profound relationship with. He's not reckless, Abe Rosenthal. He once called me. He wanted to know who I was talking to for one story, and the people I told him stunned him. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Stunned him. They were just people you wouldn't think that high up would be talking to me.
Right. So they knew it was real. That. Yeah.
They don't know anything, editors. They depend on their own. You know, editors are editors.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather commit suicide than be an editor. Because you have to depend on so many others. But he had a good instinct.
Yeah.
And that same with the New Yorker. The New Yorker, they knew exactly who I talked to.
Right.
And so, you know, they would always surprise him, you know. No, he wouldn't be talking to you, that guy. That guy, why would he be saying this to you? And I once made the editor call up somebody very prominent, said, it's an off-the-record interview. I did tell him about it, something about the Middle East. Anyway, I'm just saying.
But
they don't know. And so, but that, you know, you're asking me, you were a reporter. You were in Russia for years.
I know, but I want to hear it from you because you've been in it longer and you broke bigger stories than I did.
Because, you know, I'm telling you more than I told most people. You know,
I appreciate
people
it.
I talk to. No, it's not that. It's just I do.
Yeah.
And so I do. And so, and some of them maybe don't know me or, you know, it's a new generation.
Right.
And it's so much easier. Look, when I worked at the New York Times, the single worst thing they ever could ask me to do would be to chase somebody else's story. Somebody had a great story.
And
say, what? I don't chase other people's stories. I'm telling you, that would be my reaction.
Right.
I'm
and that explains part of the reason why people might not be following up on your story. I mean, there's a lot of jealousy.
There was one time when I did some story and the reporter who they asked to chase it called me up. It was a very prominent reporter. It was a woman reporter. And I said to her, you don't want it. You know you don't want to chase stories. She says, I know I don't. Just don't chase it. You don't have to chase it. I won't hold you guilty if you don't chase it. She said, thank you. I'll tell him that you said you won't cooperate with me at all. I said, that's great. I did that just to see if she would do what I thought she would do. I mean, so there you are.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be a she or he. They say what happened with any he would have happened. Right. If you were a major league big player story, you know, some guy that has access to the Secretary of State and all that, you don't want to ask him these questions because you don't want to lose access.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as simple as that. You're on a beat. I'm not on a beat. I can come in and kick ass and nobody gets hurt. So they don't talk to me. So I don't get invited to a dinner party, which I don't want to go to anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, but if you're covering the Times in 73 gave me the great plum because I'd done so much good work for them on Watergate. They offered me a chance to be the White House correspondent. Late 73, early 74, when Ron Ziegler was still secretary, I said, I want to do that. Abe said, "Well, if you're gonna be a, you know, if you're gonna be the next editor or have a column, you got to do it, Cy." I said, "I don't want to do it." He said, "You got to go. That's the biggest in 1973, 74, being the White House correspondent for the New York Times. You're in the paper every day. It's all that stuff." I went one day and saw the reporters scream and yell at Ron Ziegler, who was the Sec president. Yeah. And I went back and I told Roosevelt all that night. I said, "Here's what's going to happen. If I have to do this one more day, I'm quitting." He said, "No, you're not." I said, "I'm quitting." And he said, call me back. He said, "Do what you want." And I said, "Get somebody else." "Okay, great. I'm going back and just find stories for you." That's a true story.
Right.
I didn't write it. I don't know why. Too self-serving.
That's a great story. Let me ask you, though. Back then, you know, your MH Chaos expose on the CIA's illegal domestic spying program, which was massive because we found out ultimately they spied on 300,000 plus Americans. That led to the Rockefeller Commission, the famous Church Committee.
Yeah, that's a wonderful thing, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and ultimately a lot of the reforms pooped out, but whatever.
They set up a House and Senate Committee intelligence staff that really worked until it fell apart because of the bickering. Are you okay, Mark?
Yeah.
I got it working with him.
He's also
we're doing a doc, and part of the doc is this crazy person that's involved in the doc. But it's not about me. It's about a story. But they have to use this stuff anyway. You know, that, you know how it goes.
Yeah, have you done docs?
Docs?
Yeah. I've done some docs. I know how this goes.
You know what it's like.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Anyway, I'm down to gossip now with you. What the fuck?
No. I want to get back to it. You instead, you now are publishing on Substack. And what you talked about earlier is absolutely true. I mean, there seems to be this massive disconnect between the world that the Washington Post, New York Times, and this kind of like elite level of establishment journalists. I mean, a much bigger disconnect than before, I think. And I don't know what you think, where they have one view of the world, which is very much in line with sort of robust American foreign policy, imperial foreign policy, however you'd want to call it. And then there's the rest of the country, which doesn't see things that way. I mean, for example, like when Biden pulled out of Afghanistan, you remember he almost got torn apart by the Washington Press Corps report.
By doing something nobody else had the guts to do, including a guy named Barack Obama.
Right.
Which he should have done. Look,
yeah.
All I can tell you is, go ahead. What's your question?
My question is like, is it a lot worse in that way than which? I mean, you're now publishing on Substack. In some ways, it's great because you get to go directly, you know, to a huge audience, and you're not hemmed in by establishment editors. But on the other hand, it gives the establishment an excuse.
The first thing you do, the first thing Samarang does is hire a great editor.
Okay.
Who has worked for the media? Are you kidding? I'm not going to walk away from that. I mean, the first thing I've done is get I wish he would do more, but I get a fantastic editor work on, you know, tear my butt apart on a story, as they should. No, you don't walk away from that.
Right.
The fact that I'm talking directly to people, it doesn't mean I'm freer to shoot my mouth off. I have to be more careful.
Good. I'm glad.
I have to make my own system. And fact-checking has to be as good as at the New Yorker, which I don't think is as good as it used to be when I was there. When I was at the New Yorker, the last round would be with the grammarian, about parallelisms and sentence structure.
Right.
You know, I don't know if they still do that. What are you looking for, Ben? Anyway, the bottom line is, the thing about it is the response is unbelievable. They had huge numbers of people wanting to read the story, and they all write me. They can. That's somewhere in the corner my name is. I mean, we're talking about 1,600 emails in the last 2.5 days.
Right.
And what do they say is, oh, my God, we've been missing this kind of stuff.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, and so it's... Yeah. Anyway, so there we are. Anyway, look, I know you want to fill an hour, but I can't do it.
No. I don't want to fill an hour. Just last question. You can answer this or not answer this.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I was reading another part of your excellent memoir, Reporter, and this was sort of a big moment for you in going into national security reporting, where you were at a dinner and you basically got with some high level CIA and ex-CIA people, and you basically got some amazing. The beginnings of some amazing scoops here. The scoop on, basically the Soviet submarine, scoop on MH Chaos. And, you weren't sure exactly like what to do with it. And here, I'm just going to read a quote from you here. An inevitable fear for any reporter who is critical of his government's policies is being fed a false story that would be professionally catastrophic. So I resolved early that I would never publish information from someone on the inside without verifying it elsewhere, even if a second source insisted I had to pretend he did not exist. In other words, as you write here, it's possible that you will publish an article where there are sources you have, but you don't acknowledge them because that's your deal with sources. So I bring that up only because of this story.
Is there
anything you can say about that or no?
There you go. You asked me about sources.
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk about it. I just don't want to talk.
Understood.
I wrote what I wrote.
Yeah.
But let me just say something to you. Right. This isn't a hard story to find.
Yes.
And I'll tell you why. There's something called the pipeline industry. There's an industry that makes people make American companies involved. They build pipelines around the world. Are you listening to me?
Yes.
They know what happened.
Right. I hear you. Okay.
They know the last thing they want to do is end up in a goddamn newspaper story.
Yes.
But they know who did what.
Right.
Of course they know. They built the goddamn things. You know, I'm not talking necessarily about building Nord Stream 1 or 2.
Right, but they built pipelines.
They build pipelines, and they talk to divers, and they know what's happened, and they know who has the capability, and they know what they hear inside. I mean, come on.
The reason I ask that...
I'm telling that to you because it's a reality that nobody thinks about, but I did.
Of course.
So there you are.
The reason I bring it up is because I'm, a lot of the same people that are attacking you, smearing you, the Bellingcats and the OSINT bros, and these are people that I've dealt with in my career and have gone after my stories, and I hate them, and I've just seen these lines of attack, and so I wanted to just bring that up and see, or maybe you don't give a shit about these different ways that they're trying to smear stories. It annoys me.
I can't care about Bellingcat. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, why don't you think about a nexus to a certain intelligence agencies in a certain country? Come on. You get to know who's who.
Yeah.
I can't worry about that. But there are legitimate people that complain. There are a lot of private people that complain.
Yeah.
The problem is one of the problems of talking about this, the reason I have to do it because I don't want to think I'm hiding, because that I get two questions that, like you ask, you always say you always try and get a secondary source. I just don't, the only thing I can think about sources, nobody knows who they are.
Yep, I hear you.
And you have something. The one thing the government's good at is tracking down people who talk.
Yep.
And now it's interesting because in the Republican days they can't get a warrant. This Justice Department is better. They're not going to give out warrants like they used to.
Right.
I will tell you, there was a time in Bush Cheney where they could get warrants to get into NSA transcripts of phone conversations that were completely illegal.
That's insane.
To make cases sometimes. Right. Liz, you going? My wife's going to lunch. I can tell you there was stuff going on in that, what they did with the NSA. The NSA can get anybody's self. They collect, Gmail and shit like that. You have to get a warrant for it. But if you have a tough case to make in the New York District and you want to make it, and you're an aggressive conservative attorney general.
Right.
You can get somebody overheard and go to him and pretend as a Fed that you have a source on the conversation he had and get him to be a witness.
Right.
That kind of abuses were going on back in those days and in the Bush Cheney days. I didn't get around to that. I was too busy chasing the more.
You can't do every story, but.
No, that was too subtle. That was too subtle. Yeah. All right. Goodbye, buddy.
Well, thank you so much, Seymour. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Our debt is paid.
Yes, I appreciate it. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Whew. Okay. That was our interview with the legendary journalist, Pulitzer Prize winner, Seymour Hersh, about his bombshell story that everybody is either trying to ignore and looking really stupid trying to ignore it. That's like, you know, talking about major establishment media or trying to smear and pick apart and so on and so forth about basically pointing the finger. As he said, it's obvious that the U.S. was responsible for, I mean, he details the whole operation for blowing up the Nord Stream pipelines. And damn, you know, again, I said this before, I thought it was so crazy when it first happened last year, before like investigators are coming out and saying Russia didn't do it or we don't know who did it. It seems so crazy that the U.S. would do this because of the downside. I mean, the upsides I get, there was a lot more upside for the U.S. than Russia, but there was a lot bigger, I still think, downside for the U.S. than for Russia doing it. Russia would just say, okay, you blew up your own pipeline. Whereas the U.S. blew up what NATO itself had already said was critical allied infrastructure. And we did it. And it's...
I think when you look at the mainstream press now, they have decided on their own that we are at war. And by we, that means the Acela Corridor. The expensive suburbs of the East Coast. And that means the rules have changed. Like, to me, the most shocking article I've seen about this was by somebody named Mia Jankowicz. And as far as I can tell, she wrote about aesthetics and whatever that means in journalist terms, until she was hired by Insider to write an article about Hersh's article, and it's called "The Claim by a Discredited Journalist," that's Hersh, that the U.S. secretly blew up the Nord Stream pipeline is proving a gift to Putin. And this is what passes for reasoning in the centrist world, that it helps the Russians, therefore shut up. That's it.
Yep. And Reuters, of course, only reported the government's denial that it happened and called it a blog post. And obvious looking down their nose at it. I mean, this is the sort of things that Hersh has been dealing with. If anybody has a more convincing story than this, come out with it. Show us the goods, you know?
Yeah.
There is nothing like this. And anyway, we'll have to see what the consequences are. It's Hersh. So you can pretend like, oh, it's a Substack or he's senile, whatever the fuck. But... it doesn't matter. It's out there coursing through the veins, and the elite layer, Acela Corridor, and their counterparts in NATO land can try and pretend they're not seeing it, but it's out there.
Yeah. You can see why Hersh would become sort of cantankerous after a while. I mean, I'm reading this smear by Mia Jankowicz, and here's a quote. The open source investigative outlet Bellingcat was deeply critical of Hersh's reporting on chemical attacks in Syria. Mm. And Vox raised doubts about his infamous claim that about Osama. Okay, so we've got Bellingcat and Vox.
I read the Vox one recently because people cite it. And all he kept saying is, this doesn't make sense. It's not that here's a fact that is the opposite of what he wrote. It's just, this doesn't make sense. Well, a lot of things don't make sense. It doesn't make sense that the U.S. would blow up Germany's energy pipeline, okay? So, and Bellingcat, what can you say? It's like...
I loved his answer to that. Yeah, like,
they're spies.
Yeah, a spy is a spy. I don't have to answer to spies.
And let's, you know, let it be known that nobody has better sources in the intelligence community than Seymour Hersh, so... When he says Bellingcat are just a bunch of spooks and like second-rate ones at that, I mean, that's obviously what they're saying in that community. So that was nice to hear. I mean, we know they're funded by the NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, and that they're pretty cretinous, especially Elliot Higgins anyway.
There was an email that was leaked from the right. British government saying, you know, Bellingcat isn't effective anymore because everybody knows they're with us. And besides, yes. everybody knows they'll say anything for money.
Yeah. It, you know, it hasn't stopped so many people in the media anyway. It's the usual story. I just want to talk right now, though, about damn, just talking to Seymour Hersh. I mean,
Scary stuff.
I took a break after we talked to one upstairs and then before coming back down to talk to do a little post-game thing. But I feel like if I were doing a post-game interview and this were a video, I'd have two black eyes right now looking at the video camera.
I was at pains to explain to you, I didn't sneak out, you know.
John's connection dropped. And I was there facing
him. You
were
leaving you one-on-one.
Well, the thing is, so I did a brief kind of pre-interview with her. She wanted to hear me and, you know, check me. I did proper journalistic thing. And we talked a bit yesterday, and he was, but he was sick. So he was, he has a reputation for being extremely difficult. I mean, I've looked up some, you know, that people have used harder words than that. But I found him, you know, rather more or less like actually really fun to talk to yesterday. And today, although it was fun, I don't think I've ever in my life, and maybe it didn't sound this way from the outside, but it sure felt this way inside the confines of my big giant head here. I've never felt like somebody was about to say, what are you, some kind of dumb shit? I gotta go. Because I felt like we were constantly on the verge of that. And it was kind of like freezing up my brain. This has never happened to me before. And it's, I mean, he is who he is, which is great. I mean, it's got to make good audio. It's, believe me, it ain't as easy to be in the way of that thing, but it's, I'm sure it'll make good audio.
It's a very, very important story.
Yes.
And it needs to get around. And he's also a very lively, exciting voice.
Yeah. He understands that you just want the story to speak for itself, but that you have to make some appearances so that it doesn't look like you're hiding from the smears and the attacks, because that could give them ammo and say, see, he's not talking, he's not answering, whatever. That means we cowed him into silence or something. So you're kind of between a rock and a hard place there. So he is going to talk to some people. And I'm really honored that he talked to us first. I'm glad as hell I talked to him, and I hope to talk to him more and again. I mean, it's like preparing for the show, I had so many things I wanted to talk about, so many notes, so many like books marked up, bookmarked articles out there, and then talking to him. Okay, come on. What's this? I gotta go. You're gonna keep going. Come on, I gotta go.
I know.
That's all I could
Bruce
say,
is
man.
Heel, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
Radio is forever. I think Eileen quotes Michelle Yeoh of the Hong Kong film industry saying that she doesn't mind doing stunts because bruises heal, but cinema is forever. And radio is forever, too.
Radio is forever.
Let that be your inspirational poster.
Yes, that'll get me through the night. The sleep, if I can do it.
Yeah.
That and sleeping pills. Anyways, I don't know, anything else you want to add to that? I think the interview just so speaks for itself, and the article speaks for itself, and I'm just glad that that we're able to get that, and that's it. Thanks again, I mean, you know, to all of our subscribers who make this show possible, and this is all for you, and talk to you again soon, John.
Okay, thanks, everybody. Thanks Mark, in particular. And, okay.
Limping out of here.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.